Welcome to Pull Quotes, a podcast about journalistic innovation. This week, we're looking at hyperlocal, community-driven journalism, the kind of reporting that doesn't just parachute into a neighborhood, but grows from within it. We're discussing how local media can go beyond reporting to actually helping communities navigate the issues that affect them most. Our guest today is Anita Lee, a journalist known for her work in innovation. She's also a media consultant, educator, and entrepreneur based in Toronto. Anita brings more than two decades of experience in newsrooms across Toronto, New York, and Ottawa. She's worked at CBC, the Globe and Mail, and the Toronto Star. She was also recently awarded with the King Charles III Coronation Medal for her contributions to Canadian journalism, particularly her dedication to community-driven journalism and media innovation. Right now, she's the publisher and CEO of The Green Line, a hyperlocal, solutions-focused, community-driven news outlet that investigates the ways we live to help Torontonians survive and thrive in a rapidly changing city. She's been a leading voice in reimagining how journalism can better serve communities, and we're so excited to have her on Pull Quotes. Anita, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, you're an early adopter and proponent of audience engagement, analytics, and emerging media models. What first drew you to this side of the industry?
Oh man, that's a long story that I'm going to try to keep short, but it might help with a bit of context. So I'm in my late 30s now, but I started in journalism when I was 14, like in a paid capacity. Kind of went through the legacy kind of pipeline, worked, like you guys mentioned, at a lot of major Canadian publications, then ended up working at American digital-focused youth-driven publications in New York City. And that was about starting in the early 2010s is when I started doing that. So I ended up being exposed particularly at one publication, Mashable. It still exists, but at the time it was like very much one of the first of its kind covering social media in its early nascent stage. Because they cover technology and social media, they were really big on embracing new forms of technology. And so that's when I started, you know, getting really into audience engagement, like directly interfacing with audiences through social tools, also, you know, tracking audience data through Google Analytics and other like social analytics, for example. And this is during a time when certainly no Canadian publications were doing that. I was definitely an early adopter in that, and it really shifted my perspective on the industry and just my approach, essentially.
So how did those things contribute to the creation of The Green Line?
I started coming up with the idea during the pandemic. You mentioned our mission, but one of our taglines is redefining Toronto through the way we live. And it's really about getting people to take action on issues they care about in their communities and neighborhoods, right? So during the pandemic, we were all just kind of lying around, sitting around, not doing much because we weren't able to, especially during the heights of lockdown. The other thing that I want to say is because I had amassed like a lot of editorial experience at that point and also developed a lot of business knowledge in journalism, I decided that I wanted to create something of my own. I created a Substack newsletter called The Other Wave about 5 years ago that documented basically my expertise in audience engagement, journalism, innovation, and diversity. And then around like this, like I drew that process because that's a bit of a kind of like a wetting my palate when it came to dipping my toes in entrepreneurialism. I eventually started documenting the growth and the development of The Green Line there. So that's kind of how it started. And then eventually I like soft launched in October 2021 on social media, and then eventually hard launched in April 2022 with the website thegreenline.to. So that's like the short of it.
Okay. Within the emerging media models, The Green Line uses a unique action journey model that includes community consultation in producing its stories. Can you tell us what that is and how this process works in practice?
Essentially, what the action journey model is that in a given month, we tackle one systemic problem facing the city of Toronto. So the Green Line really focuses on pillars of livability. So that means like housing, jobs, food, commuting, and health. And the reason why I chose these is because they cut across like political lines, like racial lines, age lines, gender, et cetera. Like these are things that affect everybody except for like the wealthiest among us. And even then, folks in the top like earning tiers definitely still get impacted by these issues. And then what happens is basically there are like four outputs across 4 weeks in a month. So in week one, we publish an explainer that unpacks a systemic problem or the systemic problem. Week two, we publish a feature that reports on existing solutions to that problem, and it can be done in any format. So we're talking about documentaries, long form features, series of short form stories, data interactives, what have you, whatever best serves the story and the audience. And then week three, which I consider the most critical actually, is an in-person convening, like at an event that we host. So there, we always facilitate story circles, which are basically facilitated conversations that talk through solutions to the problems. It's not policy debates. It's really just sharing lived experience. And then there's also like a catered community dinner. And we often have like something really functional or fun or both there. So what I mean by functional is like, for example, we did an Action Journey issue on evictions and how to deal with them if you're experiencing them. And one of the people that we asked to give a presentation was a gentleman who basically helped tenant associations organize and then fight back against what they considered unlawful behavior by landlords. So it's very practical, very step-by-step. And at these events, we actually ask people to fill in these community surveys where we ask them similar questions that we did at the story circles, where they're providing, you know, talking about overlooked problems in existing media and then also talking about solutions that they surfaced. And then week four, we crowdsource those solutions and the data from the community surveys, we analyze them, and then we pull out the top three solutions that emerge from the conversations, and we reflect those back to members of our community. And that also includes, you know, we crowdsource links to resources so they can take action on their own terms. So the whole idea is like, it's taking journalism away from this, you know, feeling of like passive consumption where you feel really anxious and depressed, because that's like, I'm sure you guys can relate to that, especially younger generations are like turning away from the news because they just feel so stressed out by it, to something that's more active. Because I always feel that when you do something about a problem, you actually feel a lot better about it. Like whether it's a personal problem or a professional one, like when you take action, you don't feel like you're just like paralyzed.
Yeah, this process sounds as elaborate as it sounds effective. What have you learned about audience needs through this model that traditional outlets might miss?
I think it really depends. And I wouldn't even say it's elaborate, because it's pretty, like, it's a simple four-step process. I was just going into detail about it. But I'd like to think it is effective. And I think the simplicity of it is actually why there's been a lot of other publications around the world. And I'm not overstating that, because I often go speak in different countries about the model, and many of them, because they're facing a lot of crises. Basically, what I would say also is because there's a lot of governments that are moving to super far right and towards fascism, there's just less government and social services available. So this is actually a really effective way to fill in that gap and to facilitate mutual aid, for example, or even encourage people to advocate for themselves through policy. So there's been a lot of interest. And I think that's kind of how audience needs have been addressed. But it's the term that I coined to describe this is engagement 2.0. So engagement 1.0 is basically community consultation, something you referenced in the beginning, where you're asking communities about what their information needs are and serving them. But I felt like we needed to take that a step further, because that just isn't adequate, because sometimes people don't even understand the value of journalism anymore. A lot of, like, I'm sure you guys have encountered this too, when you do interviews, sometimes people are like, why can't you show me what is being said beforehand? Why can't I control the narrative? And that is because a lot of people are their own publications these days. They're like their own distributors on social media. So it's really important to actually evolve the idea of journalism and add real value. And that's where I think the action orientation is really effective, because people can see, oh, like this information is actually like helping me make better decisions, helping me advocate for myself, helping me meet other people who are going through similar things so we can work together to solve the problem. So that's kind of what we're finding at a high level.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually, engaging the community in that way. How did you come up with those five pillars that you mentioned earlier: housing, food, jobs, commuting, and health?
It was just kind of intuitive. Like, I don't even think it took a time to like really come up with them. Like I mentioned, it's just something that cut across like all sorts of demographic factors. And for me, like, I feel very passionate about fighting and combating polarization. And I am really concerned about it. So that's something like you guys, your generation talks about a lot, is like getting canceled and stuff. And that's alarming, because people should be able to have different perspectives across the political spectrum and convey that respectfully, as long as you're not doing harm to others, right? Like, people come from very different experiences and we have to have empathy to understand them. So to me, like, the Green Line is very nonpartisan. We're very values driven. We care about communities, but also, like, we make space for people to be themselves. And so to me, that's actually why I chose those, because they're obviously, everything is politicized, but they tend to be the most brass tacks, right? It's like, it lends itself to service journalism. Like, you got to eat, you got to have a job to live. You got to figure out how to get around the city. You want to be healthy. Like, these are all things that everyone can relate to that impacts everybody.
For sure. Speaking of crossing political borders, I noticed that the latest Green Line guide walks readers through how to prepare for the federal election. What went into putting that together?
So that's something I really want to shout out my managing editor, Yara Elmer, for leading. I'm largely inhabiting a publisher role, although obviously I set the editorial agenda as editor-in-chief, but she's definitely my right hand. She works together with James Westman and Sahana Ranganathan, who are both our engagement reporters, to produce this election guide. And our guides have always been popular. We've always done guides for various elections because obviously we're a hyper-local publication. So we were like, what value can we bring to federal or provincial election coverage? And so for us, we realized like, it's really about the formats. And so before C18 led the tech giants to banning Canadian publisher links on and accounts on their platforms, like on Meta platforms like Facebook and Instagram, we used to basically really tailor these guides to the slide format. So it's just easy for people to save and like literally put, it's like a pocket guide, but in your phone, and they could just take it out at the polls. Because people, our core audience aren't like wonky policy people or people who are really in the know. We really want to capture people who may be like turning away from the news, who are younger, right? Because 74% of our audience is 18 to 44. So we were like, okay, let's basically get all like the party platforms or any sort of public statements or any sort of public information we can get about what the party stances are on the five pillars of livability that the Green Line focuses on, like the major party perspectives. And then we just put them in a really easy to swipe and easy to read guide that's really quite visual and just easy to access, easy to use, something that you can pull out and consult before hitting the polls, basically. And so that's just the ethos behind it. We really think carefully about visuals, about format, about usability, because that's something that younger people think about all the time.
Yeah, no, I think after reading through it, it was very, very helpful. So next question. Sometimes people argue that journalism should stop at informing the public and not encourage action. The Green Line seems to challenge that notion. How do you see innovation playing a role in reshaping that tension between reporting and helping communities respond to the issues that they face?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I actually don't think it, I think it walks the line really well. Like, I don't think that, I think when people say that, they're often referring to advocacy, and we're like unequivocally not an advocacy publication. Like, if I'm crowdsourcing solutions that people from on the ground are already coming up with and we're reporting it back to them, we're really just facilitating the action. We're not forcing them to choose a path. And so that is really a critical distinction, because we aren't saying like, well, this is what we think is best for you guys. Like, that never has never worked in any context at all. And so to me, like, that's how I would say it. It's, I think the only way, and I feel really strongly about this, I feel like the only way to innovate is really to understand the rules of the game extremely well. Like, and I've literally only ever had this job my whole life, except for one time when I worked in an optometry office when I was 14. And then my mom helped me quit that because my manager was mean. So like, basically I really understand journalism. I love it. I'm like, in some ways really obsessed with it and its role in society. And I understand many different facets of it. I've like been an editorial roles, business roles, hybrid roles, like audience roles and stuff. And so that is where innovation should come from. It should come from a really strong understanding of what you can take and what you can leave. So for me, this is like an organic evolution of what like the major principles and tenets of journalism are, because we're a public service at the end of the day. We really need to get back to that, right? Like if you, one of the earliest issues we did at the Greenland was in April 2022, when we launched, we did something about living with COVID in Toronto. And we actually had a long form solutions focused feature that basically looked at how the city of Toronto was dealing with the pandemic at the time. And then also the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, like 100 years ago. So what was really interesting about that is like we had clips, archival clips from places like the Globe and Mail, where they were like putting out notices for like volunteer nurses or like basically crowdsourcing meals for people. And that's not something that you would see in the Globe today. That's not shade to them at all. I love the Globe, but it's one of those things where you're like, okay, like we just need to get back to that principle, that concept and that idea. And then what does it look like in 2025? So to me, I don't think it's actually kind of doing away with like just we're not journalism at all. We're just going to like throw that out the window. That's not true at all. I think I'm actually like going back to old school best practices, but just it looks different.
So what advice would you give to journalists or outlets who want to move forward toward more community driven reporting?
I think it's hard to answer that because it's very much, it depends on the community. It depends on like the neighborhood. It depends on the specific group. What I've learned is that people, if I could distill it to something really simple, I really believe that people are looking for human connection. And I know that might sound trite. Like it's a throwaway. You might hear like a lot of places like co-opt that term or just use it a lot. But I really like, especially events. Remember I said like, they're quite critical to our model. The reason why I feel that way is because I feel like it captures lightning in a bottle and it really captures the essence and the spirit of the Green Line extremely well at our events. And it's just this idea like people just want to be understood by each other. They want to feel like things are, they have a pathway forward. They just want to connect, you know? And so I think journalism is really that. It's like it sets the table for conversation historically at the dinner table, at the breakfast table. And I feel like what we're doing is conjuring up that feeling again. And so if I were to distill it to like one thing that I think communities want or people want, it's really that.
Yeah, great. Well, those are all the questions that I have for you, Anita. This was incredible. I feel like I learned so much. Thank you for taking the time to be here. And it was an absolute pleasure.
It was a pleasure for me too. Thanks for the great questions. It's always fun to talk about this.
This episode of Pull Quotes was hosted by me, Jin Yu, and it was produced by Chloe Kim, Matthew Hanick, and myself. If you enjoyed this episode, explore all of our podcasts in the podcast tab at reviewofjournalism.ca. I'm your host, Jin. Thank you for listening. Thank you.